The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Good morning, Glory America. Bonjour. Hi, Canada. You hear it live on the West Coast for the last week. I'll be back inside the Beltway this time next week. So, hello. Good morning. Good to be back. I want to thank Mark Davis and Ed Morrissey and Bruce Howley and Kurt Schlichter for making it possible for me and the Fetching Mrs. Hugh to take a week off. And everything went fine. Kurt did not destroy the studio. As you can see, it's still standing. The computer is fried. On a backup computer. So I don't know what Kurt did to the computer. I think he may have planted aggressive hardware software packages that were sleeper silent killers. But we're back. And if you're watching on the Salem News Channel, you can see we're just coping with a fried out computer, but we'll get that fixed. Let me run down the news this Monday morning. There were five developments late yesterday. First of all, dozens were killed when Russia sent a cruise missile strike on a military base very close to the Polish border. And 180 foreign fighters based in Ukraine were there. 35 were killed. No Americans were killed. There had been Americans at the base only days before. So an escalatory, very dangerous move by Putin, but he's increasingly acting feral, in my opinion. U.S. journalist Brent Renaud killed. Journalists are always in harm's way in a war zone. Very horrifying to lose one. Very experienced. Though he was not on assignment for NBC. He had worked for NBC often in the past and for the New York Times. Moscow is apparently using phosphorus gas in the Donbas, the original area that they seized 4 years ago. A new mayor has been installed. Cities on the Black Sea coast. And then finally, we've got lots of news that Vladimir Putin is, quote, according to Boris Johnson, engaging barbaric actions, testing all of humanity. So it's not like he has a plan other than to kill everyone. Now, the interesting news overnight, oil began to fall. So I will look up oil when we get to the next segment and find out where it is. But it began to fall last night, usually pricing in news that talks are underway. Again, between Kyiv and the Kremlin, those talks aren't guaranteed to come up anything other than short till Putin decides he got no way out and looks for a way out. The Chinese philosopher quoted by everyone who's never read him, Sun Tzu, always said, leave your opponent a golden bridge over which to exit so that they have a face-saving way out of a situation. And here my guess is it will be Mariupol and the Donbas and Crimea, and Ukraine will not dispute their annexation to Russia. They have a lot of lives. We'll see if it comes to that. The Belarus has hospitals next to the border filling up with Russian soldiers. They've been forbidden to talk about how many dead and wounded Russian soldiers there are. That strike, according to the Financial Times, at the base close to Poland was supposed to send a message to NATO, which we can hit you at any time. Look, even Joe Biden has been clear on this. Every square inch of NATO, attack on one square inch of NATO is an attack on it all. That was as reckless as it gets. Protesting their war, but whenever they hold up a sign, they get arrested in Red Square. Lots of videos of that. People who are absolutely fearless stand up, hold up a little sign that says, no war, and off they go to the KGB, no longer it's called the FSB, prison. The EU is going to sanction Roman Abramovich, who owns a soccer club. They've already taken that away from him. Luxury good exports are sanctioned. Things will only get worse. Putin's war sends Russians into exile. Thousands of Russians saw their comfortable middle-class existence fade overnight, and they headed for the ATM. They got whatever they could get in anything other than a ruble, which is worth very little now, and they began running. The land border with Latvia, travelers waited hours to cross into Latvia. They took every plane is full going anywhere. So they'll go anywhere to get out of Russia before they close Russia's airports. And 2.7 million Ukrainians have left their country. Meanwhile, Russia, according to the Wall Street Journal, is dropping a internet iron curtain down. They're cutting off everything that they can to stop information from the war. I've got a brand new Washington Post column up over at WashingtonPost.com on Sergei, the driver who took us and brought us back from the airport on Saturday and Friday, respectively. An American, originally from Russia, spent RT, Russia TV, Russian broadcast relayed by China because we've sanctioned it. And, of course, it's propaganda, but it's all he's watching. He doesn't trust American media. So we heard sort of unfiltered Putin propaganda from Sergei, who's a good guy, really an audio, as two kids, as a American wife. His parents have emigrated. He's a legal immigrant. But when you can control all of the media outlets in your country, you can distort what's going on. Russian prosecutors are now warning they're going to seize American assets. You know, that's always a winner for long-term growth. When you do what Cuba did, expropriate, when Castro came to power all those decades ago before we knew he was a bad guy, we knew he was a bad guy when he began to expropriate. U.S. officials asked China for a military hard way. Jake Sullivan is in Italy today to meet with his counterpart. That's Jake Sullivan, the National Security Advisor, to warn him against that. We also have a great story from the Financial Times on the polls. The polls are heroes. And I've always known polls are heroes. I've only been to Poland once. I've been to Gdansk. And I've never been to Warsaw or Krakow. But Poland has taken in almost 2 million people. They are opening their homes to them. The Polish Grandmother Society has gotten together online, led by one influencer, is a Polish grandma, and they're just taking in all the kids and moms. Moldova is at, quote, the breaking point. That's a little country between Ukraine and Romania. Any more people? It's at the max. The U.S. won't negotiate Russia-related, Ukraine-related sanctions with Russia to save the Iran nuclear deal. So that's good news. We should not be doing a deal with the Iranians. They're another terrorist regime that when they get a nuclear weapon is going to act exactly like Putin's acting. Once they get a nuclear weapon, they will just be Putin marching across minefields like they did in the long ago Iran-Iraq war. We can't let them get a nuclear weapon. Team Biden is in love with this idea. Wendy Sherman went on with Brett Baer on Sunday Report on Fox News Sunday yesterday. Our first cut, please, of Wendy Sherman.
I hope that China is looking very carefully at what's happening. We have a united world with very grave and very consequential sanctions on Russia. We understand and support a one China policy, but we don't believe that China, PRC, ought to take Taiwan by force, and we will do everything we can to deter that effort by the PRC, and I think they're watching very closely. In fact, I think they made that statement, Brett, because they've seen what's happened, and they're trying to go on the offense, knowing that they ought to be on the defense.
Now, I'm telling you what she ought to have said is there's a one China, two system policy, and we guarantee Taiwan's independence. She didn't. Weakness is provocative. She was weak. Brett Baer is going to join me later in the program. We'll talk about that. Second comment from Wendy Sherman to Brett Baer yesterday, cut number seven.
I think that's an open question yet, Brett, to be perfectly honest. We saw Russia and China come closer together, certainly before the Olympics, putting out a long manifesto about their partnership and how they were going to move forward together. And at the same time, we've seen China pretty uncomfortable with an invasion of a sovereign country. China has, the People's Republic of China has often said that sovereignty is key, territorial integrity is key, that countries should decide their own political future. We agree with those principles. We hope that China does as well. You know, in two weeks, Vladimir Putin undid 30 years of economic development There was an international order that China and Russia.
There wasn't. The fact that she believes there was an international order is why Wendy Sherman has the nickname Wendy. What more? Remember, she did the giveaway to North Korea in 1994. She did the first JCPOA in 2015. She's back at it on JCPOA in China now. She is an appeaser. Nice lady. Appeasement driven. Neville Chamberlain with gray hair and a nice looking 2022. Eric, I'm back. It's Hugh Hewitt from the West Coast. Stay tuned. Joins me of the Washington Examiner, the New York Post, and many other places. Good morning, Selena. How are you?
Good morning, Sunshine. How are you?
I'm great. I've never heard of Elk County. I followed Pennsylvania forever until I read your column in the Washington Examiner this weekend. I'd never heard of Elk County. Where is Elk County?
It's northeast of Pittsburgh, about five counties northeast, towards the New York border.
All right. So they have a mountain fest.
Yeah.
I spent life in Normal, away from Twitter, just having a lovely time at the Fetching Mrs. Hewitt on a break. And you know what? Everywhere we went, life is normal. People are not, they're laughing at mask mandates. They're not doing them anymore. How was the Mountain Fest?
Yeah, I didn't see a mask anywhere. In fact, I'll be honest, where I live, I haven't seen masks for a very long time. That doesn't, and I think it's important to note that there's a very different, big difference between not wearing a mask and not, being safe and or not, taking precautions, not being boosted or not being vaccinated. And people, I think, confuse the two of them. And life very much for a big part of the country has returned to normal and has been at normal probably for almost a year or pretty close to a year. People were.
Have you noticed that Tony Fauci is missing?
Who?
Yeah. Isn't it amazing? In the course of 1 month, he's been disappeared.
He's been completely disappeared. There's no more scolding. There's no more, taking people to task. There's no more dividing. All of a sudden, now we divide Americans over other things, but right now we don't divide them over the people that are going to take the country into a cold, dark winter.
And the parents won. All across the United States, masks are off. Parents won.
Parents did win. And what's really interesting, and I've been talking about this on your show for probably about a year now, as we head into these elections, it has put us in an inside-outside election cycle as opposed to the traditional Democrat-Republican. And while it has moved a lot of people center-right, meaning the insiders, the people with power, our cultural curators like corporations, academia, institutions, government, politicians, Hollywood, et cetera, they have moved people center-right that normally wouldn't be there. It will be interesting to see if that coalition sticks together because of it appears to me that the people with the power still haven't learned any lessons yet.
Well, the people with the power still believe that they have power. The disintermediation of the power has been rather extraordinary. They don't know what they don't know. They don't realize that the complete collapse of credibility by Dr. Fauci and others isn't going to change anytime soon.
You know, a few weeks ago when the State of the Union happened, I was watching it, and I'm watching the president walk in, and watching all the members of Congress and the administration walk in, and they're greeted by this, like, all this applause, right? And you watch them sort of soak it all in. It's sort of hard not to when you're in that experience. But I'm sitting there watching them, and I'm thinking, this is how they think everybody thinks. This is why they make the decisions that they do, because they're so encased in this world that's false. It's quicksand, and it's the problem with people in Washington, because they think those kinds of moments, and those are the kinds of moments they're only always exposed to, are the ones that define who they are. That's very different from how people feel in the rest of the country.
Deputy Secretary Sherman, did you watch Fox News special report with Brett yesterday?
Yesterday, I did not.
Okay. Well, she was on, and she gets asked. I can't even believe her answer at the beginning is so condescending. Cut number seven.
I think that's an open question yet, Brett, to be perfectly honest. We saw Russia and China come closer together, certainly before the Olympics, putting out a long manifesto about their partnership and how they were going to move forward together. And at the same time, we've seen China pretty uncomfortable with an invasion of a sovereign country. China
hey, stop.
Has-
now, China is neither. China doesn't feel, Selena.
Yeah. Right.
But I just don't understand why they tie that. Countries have interests, not emotions.
Yeah. Countries do not have feelings, especially China. So I just thought, well, that is a really out of touch. You're right. Very condescending.
Oh, she was so condescending through this whole thing. And I've only met her once, and she was condescending then as well. But Wendy Sherman thinks she knows how the world works. She's like the Ben Rhodes of this administration. And she's been wrong for 40 years, and she's still wrong. Selena Zito, always a pleasure. All things Selena are found at selenazito.com. I just tweeted out her new column on Mountain Fest. Go read it from the Washington Examiner. Come back for hour two of the Hugh Hewitt Show. It's Monday. Welcome. Morning, Glory America. Bonjour, hi, Canada. Hugh Hewitt on the West Coast for one more week back to the Beltway on Friday. Joined by Jake Sherman of Punch Bowl News. Good morning, Jake.
Good morning, Hugh. How are you?
Good. Your Punch Bowl News alert today is that pork is back, and you run through the four most endangered Democratic senators, Senator Kelly of Arizona, Senator Hassan of New Hampshire, Cortez Masto of Nevada, and, of course, Raphael Warnock. They all got goodies. But, Jake, honestly, do you think anybody cares that light rail's coming to Phoenix? I don't think that's going to have much of an impact on Mark Kelly's reelection campaign.
Yeah, I don't know the answer to that. I mean, I think these things do tend to have an effect. I mean, I think what you're getting at is does it have enough of an effect that it outweighs a bad environment? And I think that's a legitimate question.
The bad environment got worse on the week that I was off. I watched the public opinion polling. The president got a little bump from the State of the Union. It's dissipated already, and it's continuing to fall. How do you think Ukraine is playing in the American public's assessment of President Biden?
Well, it's a really good question. It's something we've struggled with. I mean, I don't know definitively how it has. I think that his numbers are obviously not great on Ukraine. I think that part of that is just the kind of spillover from having bad numbers overall. But I will say this. I think the administration and people in the administration have actually conceded this to me. I think that the White House has not done a great job at making people understand why they should care. And that's a really big challenge because people are wary of foreign involvement no matter where it is. And this White House, I don't think, has done a great job of explaining that here's why we're involved in this situation between Russia and Ukraine to the extent we are involved. And here's what is going to happen if we're not involved. And I think furthermore, Hugh, on top of that, the idea that this is somehow spiking gas prices are Vladimir Putin's fault, I think that is going to be a really tough message in this year politically and substantively, because Vladimir Putin's, you know, it is partially true, of course. It's not the whole story. And I think that's going to be a difficult argument to make.
You know, Jake, I had an op-ed, a column, my column for the Post is weekly. So I did one on Friday and I did one yesterday. Friday's was on the fact that inflation in 2021 was 7%. That's before Putin invaded. The president spent the weekend saying the gas prices are Putin's fault. I don't think the American people are dummies. I think they realize that there's a knock-on effect. There's going to be more inflation because of Putin and our sanctions, but the underlying inflation goes back further. Do they really think the American people are going to blame Putin for the inflation that occurred in 2021?
I think they're going to try. Yes, I think that they believe that they could blame spiking prices on all sorts of things, including the skirmish between Russia and Ukraine. And by the way, it's only going to get worse, is what they think and what experts think, since there's material in chips that comes from Ukraine, and there's all sorts of long tail impacts of the skirmish between Russia and Ukraine, the war between Russia and Ukraine. And but I think that they believe that that message works. And I'm skeptical.
Yeah, well, they obviously, they've only got, when there's one shirt in the closet, that's what you wear. And so there's one shirt in the closet and it's Putin did this. And so they're going to be out there saying Putin did this. They dispatched Wendy Sherman, Deputy Secretary of State, longtime left-wing activist, former head of Emily's List. She negotiated the 1994 Korean deal, which failed. She negotiated the JCPOA, which Trump canceled. Now she's back trying to resurrect it. And they sent Wendy Sherman on the Fox News Sunday yesterday, which, well, they had Brett, so they trust Brett. He's a straight shooter. But what did you make of them choosing to make her available to Fox News? I have a theory, but I want to know what yours is.
I was traveling, so I didn't actually see it. But, there's only a certain number of people in the national security community who will go on television, in the diplomacy community who will go on television, and I assume that's why they put her on. Why do you think they put her on?
Because Fox News is ascending and the other Sunday shows are collapsing. So if you want to try and communicate through the Sunday shows, you've got to do Fox News Sunday. They used to ignore it, but now the week, whatever they have Jake on, State of the Union, that's collapsed. The traditionals are still hanging around 2 million to 4 million, but they're Face the Nation is now ascendant. But Fox News Sunday is slowly gathering in an impregnable lead, Jake Sherman. It's really the numbers during the week are already established that Fox News is where people are going, and not just Republicans, but the center left. And I'm curious about messaging.
I think that's interesting. I mean, and it's especially interesting given that Fox News Sunday doesn't have a host at the moment. But I actually think this administration has been relatively decent with Fox News Sunday. That's at least my recollection. They've put a bunch of people on Fox News Sunday. And you do see that, by the way. There are plenty of Democrats on Capitol Hill who go on Fox News Sunday. So clearly they think it's a venue worth spending time in. And by the way, they don't do that much during the week with the weekly cable program. So that's an interesting distinction.
Yeah, well, I do not see them doing it during the week, which is a mistake because Fox laps the other two cable channels completely combined, but showing up on Fox News Sunday is, and they don't have a host yet. I don't know if it's going to be Brett or Dana or Martha. They're kind of running the same thing they did for the special report that now has gone over to Jesse. But it just seems to me that Fox News Sunday is ascending. Wendy Sherman, though, is not who I would send out. She's a lovely person. She's very smart. She is hard left. And she cannot not speak Beltway speak, Jay.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
I think I lost you there for a second. But I don't think there are very many people in the State Department who would go on television. I think Anthony Blinken is one of them. Wendy Sherman's another. Jake Sullivan was on some of the other shows. And I think that's kind of the totality of people who could speak for the national security wing or the national security kind of coterie of aides in the Democratic Party.
There are some Democratic senators who are pretty good. Angus King, who's an independent but caucuses with the Democrats, Mark Warner, Chris Coons, Chris Murphy. Did they go along with the non-sale of the MiG-29s to Ukraine from Poland?
No, and that's going to be something we're asking a lot about this week. I mean, we talked to people about it last week. Steny Hoyer, I was at the Democratic retreat in Philadelphia. He talked about it last week. I have to assume that this is going to be a big kerfuffle on Capitol Hill this week. But I will say, I think that, and we wrote about this a little bit last week, I do think that Capitol Hill is leading the way on foreign policy the last couple of weeks. I mean, they were early on the oil ban. They were early on sanctions, although they didn't really get it done to the extent that they wanted to. So I think you're seeing Capitol Hill take a much more muscular approach, and even Democrats, on foreign policy than we ever saw in any other administration. I'm not sure what that is a function of, but you just have a bunch of well-respected Senate Democrats and Republicans at the top of the party who are well-versed and kind of almost prime ministers, I guess, in their own sense, who travel the world and are very involved in foreign policy. And I think that's what you're seeing.
No, I agree with that. I think Tom Cotton is Secretary of State, and he has been slamming the administration on the MiG-29s. Do they have a good answer, Jake, why we didn't do that? Because it appears I don't know what your reporting is. It appears from everything I've read that Tony Blinken okayed it, Pullum was going to do it, and then Joe Biden canceled it.
That's what it seems like to me. I have not heard a more in-depth answer besides some of the logistical problems of getting those MiGs to the Ukrainians. But again, I have to imagine there's a lot of people on Capitol Hill this week. There will be briefings. I know the head of CENTCOM is on the Hill this week. There's a bunch of military briefers on the Hill this week. So I imagine that's something we're going to hear a lot more about.
Jake Sherman, thank you. Punchbowl News in your mailbox every morning. Go to punchbowlnews.com, sign up for it. Let me check markets, brought to you, of course, by andrewandtodd.com. Andrewandtodd.com are places where you go to buy a house. Now, some of you, there's a big story on rent control, which I'm going to get to today because it's a nightmare. If your city is about to do this, stop them. Rent control measures are back as home rents reach new highs, according to the Wall Street Journal. Lawmakers across the U.S. are looking to enact rent control. No, they're not. Not smart ones. Anyone who says rent control is sacrificing the future of their city. Take a look at San Francisco. Take a look at New York. Rent control destroys. But the answer, of course, is to own. The way to own is to go to andrewandtodd.com. Call them at 888-1172. The 10-year treasury crested 2% when I was gone. It's up to 2.04%. It's not coming back, people. Inflation is here. Become a non-occupying co-borrower with your son or daughter, andrewandtodd.com. My phone number is 1-800-520-1234. What do you think about Putin's war? I'll be right back. I want to remind you that our sponsor is andrewandtodd.com. They're with Sierra Pacific. They lend you money to refinance your house or buy a home or help your son or daughter become investors in real estate by becoming a non-occupying co-borrower. They help senior citizens with reverse mortgage. They help veterans with no money down mortgages. They help you refinance. So if you need to get money out of your house or you need a whole new house, go to andrewandtodd.com or call them at 888-1172. Welcome back, America. I'm Hugh Hewitt. Arizona is near and dear to my heart. I went over to moderate debates for the GOP nominees for Senate and governor about 3 weeks ago. One of them was Congressman Matt Salmon, member of Congress for a total of 20 years. He's running for governor again. Good morning, Congressman. Good to have you back.
Morning, Hugh. It's great to be on. Thank you.
It's early over there in Arizona, and so I'm glad that you're – I still don't know what time it is, though. We switch the clocks on Sunday, but you never do it in Arizona. So is it actually 5:30 or 6:30?
It's 5:30 a.m., bright and early.
Well, thank you. I'm glad you're up. So, Congressman, you tried this once before. You did it in off year against in the first election of an incumbent president. Never a good time to run for office. You almost beat Janet Napolitano. If you had, we wouldn't have the problem we've got on the border right now. Why will you win this time and you didn't win the last time?
Well, I think that the wind is at our back in a big way this time. Joe Biden's the best recruiter for Republicans I've ever seen. And right now, the country's in a very, very big mess. The world's in a mess. And I think that people are looking for steady leadership to run the states and believing that the only real opportunity we have to really take our government back or our Constitution back is by electing some really, really strong and steel backbone state leaders to stand up to the federal overreach.
Now, what I tell my audience, Matt Salmon, is when I talk to local candidates like you, I'm actually talking about national issues, because as you run, so will the Senate candidate run, right? It's the top of the ticket that will deliver the Senate seat that there are five people running for. Is that not unfailingly true?
Oh, that's absolutely true. And there's a big, big, big coattail effect all the way through. And I think that it's pretty I think it's a fait accompli that the Republicans are going to take the House and the Senate at the federal level. But I am not really, really overly optimistic that even when they do, any real positive change is going to happen. All they can do is block Biden for the next 2 years. And so I think it falls to the states to stand up and fight on principle for the Constitution, the 10th Amendment, and folks like Ron DeSantis, Kristi Noem, Greg Abbott, and Kevin Stitt of Oklahoma are going to stand up and fight on behalf of the states to take back the role and the responsibility that the founding fathers actually gave them and the federal government has been ignoring for a long, long, long time.
Now we're on right now in Tucson and Prescott and in all of Greater Phoenix. And of course, Maricopa County is everything. How do you do in Maricopa County? And would you explain to people what Maricopa County is?
Maricopa County is the largest county in Arizona, and it is where Phoenix resides. It's the most populous county. And if you don't do well in Maricopa County, you don't do well in the state election. In fact, if you don't win Maricopa County, the likelihood is that you're not going to win the state. And I've been a U.S. congressman for 10 years from Maricopa County. And I believe that because of my background and the support I've gotten as a founder of the Freedom Caucus and somebody that is a very, very staunch conservative Republican that believes in the constitutional rule of law, I think that that bodes very, very well for me. I think also the fact that I'm the only candidate running that actually has a record of having voted time and time again on the issues that I'm talking about, I think that bodes really well. And in the forums that we've had with the other candidates, that comes out loud and clear that, you know, none of them have the experience and the background of actually having voted on these things and showing that I'm actually exactly who I say I am.
You know, in that forum that I moderated, I said there are about 50,000 people working for the state of Arizona. You corrected me. You said there are 38,000 people. So you actually knew what you were talking about. Have you got the skill set that the others don't to manage?
Well, Hugh, I believe I do. I mean, I've been a CEO of companies. I was the president of a national trade association. I have been a top executive in a Fortune 500 company. And in addition to that, I was a congressman for 10 years, the state party chairman, and a state senator. And I believe with the combination of all of those skills, I'm far and away more qualified than any of the other candidates. In fact, I think if this was a headhunter looking at a leader of a major corporation or a major entity, that I'm the only one that even would make it to the interview process.
There are a lot of people whom I respect in Arizona, John Kyle, Doug Ducey, a lot of great people. Right. They're kind of staying out of the primaries. Do you expect them to get in at the last minute?
I doubt that they will. Governor Ducey is the head of the Republican Governors Association, and they pretty religiously stay out of primary campaigns. And John Kyle, I think, is really, really focused on some other things right now. I've had good conversations. I served in the congressional delegation with John Kyle for many, many years. Great respect for him. But ultimately, you know, I'm proud that most of my Freedom Caucus buddies have endorsed me. Governor Kevin Stitt of Oklahoma understands what it takes to be a governor of a strong Republican state, and he has endorsed me. I've been endorsed by Club for Growth. In fact, Ron DeSantis and I are the only two governors that's been endorsed by Club for Growth, and I've been endorsed by Freedom Works. They all know that I'm not just a bunch of talk. I've got a voting record that backs up everything I say I'm going to do.
Now, what can a governor do about the border? There's a story in the Journal today about opioids taking a higher proportion of blacks than whites. And I shake my head. Opioids is colorblind. Opioid kills whoever takes it. Fentanyl kills everybody. What can you do about the southern border, which is for all intents and purposes wide open?
Well, Hugh, Article 4, Section 4 of the Constitution says that the federal government shall protect the states from invasion. Our attorney general a few weeks ago came out and said that he believes that what's happening with the cartels at the border is tantamount to an invasion. And I believe that that gives us, also under the 10th Amendment of the Constitution, I think it gives us extraordinary powers to defend our state's sovereign borders. And right now, I believe that we have the ability to arrest people that violate our state laws. Criminal trespass is a state law. And I've said very, very plainly that when I'm governor, I will stand behind our law enforcement arresting and incarcerating those that come across our border illegally. And I've been told by the border sheriffs that the big problem is that we don't have the jail space. Well, we had the toughest sheriff in America several years ago, Joe Arpaio, that built something called Tent City. And I'd like to do the same thing for those that come across the border illegally and send a message that while Joe Biden may be sending out a message that Arizona is open and you can cross the border, we're going to send a clear message. No, it's not. And if you want to cross the border illegally, you better do so in another state.
A lot of my friends from California days, I live inside the Beltway now. I visit California in January and February. I'm going back next week. They left California for your state. They went over there. What's it doing to the politics of Arizona that so many Californians are fleeing there?
Well, what I'm finding as I go across the state, and I've been across the state so many times I can't even count it anymore, is that there is a large number of folks, we call them California refugees, coming across the California border, moving to Arizona to get away from California's oppressive taxes and horrible policies, especially during COVID. And when I meet those folks, I look them in the eye and I shake their hand and I say, remember why you left, and don't do to Arizona what the folks in California did to California. I truly do believe that most of the folks that I've met that come from California hated those policies and don't want to see them replicated in Arizona. I truly do believe that the wind is at our backs in this election, and we're going to win handily. And once I win the primary, I'll be facing Katie Hobbs, who, if she were in the Congress right now, would be in the squad with AOC and right side by side with Bernie Sanders. That's not going to fly in Arizona. It's just not. She is a socialist by heart. And I truly do believe that a staunch, conservatively minded, pragmatic Republican guy like me is going to beat her hands down.
Now, Matt Salmon, it's a late primary. I've never understood why Arizona waits until August, but it always means that you're all out of money by the time somebody wins the nomination. Will you have the funds you need?
Well, with a combination of the Republican Governors Association, who's already purchased $10 million of airtime for the Republican candidate that comes out in August. That was in our paper just a couple of days ago. And Club for Growth is a staunch supporter of mine. They come in with a lot of support. I think that we're going to be in just great shape. Yeah, I will probably have my financial resources depleted by the end of the primary. But been there, done that. This is my 20th election. And I have never lost a primary. I don't intend for this to be my first. And I only lost to Janet Napolitano by less than one percentage point. And I'm not going to replicate that one, not this time.
Well, that was, again, I go back to Maricopa County. You just got to do the blocking and tackling in Maricopa County. And how is the, you know, the Latino vote used to be a blue vote. It's not anymore. What's going on in the Latino vote?
Not at all. The Latinos are very concerned about several issues. Obviously, they're concerned about job opportunities, which I'm the only candidate talking about getting rid of the state income tax so that we can compete with Florida and Texas for those high-paying jobs. But also, additionally, they're really concerned about education. And what they found is during COVID, their kids were disproportionately hurt by the schools shutting down, also by some of the garbage that's being taught in the schools. And I'm a big proponent of letting the tax dollars follow the child to whatever school they want to go to. I also was one of the early members when I was in the state Senate that sponsored charter schools. And I was on that original bill creating charter schools in the state of Arizona. So I'm a big choice in education guy, and that's really resonating. I'm working with several Hispanic pastors of churches, and they love the idea of giving their families the opportunity to vote with their feet in going to the schools of their choice, whether it be private, parochial, whatever, or charter schools, that they can take their money and go to the schools of their choice, and they love that.
Matt Salmon, you got to see quite a few State of the Unions from the gallery, from being in the House of Representatives. What did you make of President Biden's most recent State of the Union?
I thought it was the consummate denial. He's oblivious to what's going on in the country. And he is, I think, the best campaigner for Republicans I've ever seen. We have seen our numbers growing dramatically. And his State of the Union was as clueless as anybody I've ever seen. You know, the only guy smiling in America right now is Jimmy Carter, because he won't go down as the worst president of the last century.
Yeah, it is unfortunate. Last question. What do you think happened to Tony Fauci? He's gone.
Tony Fauci, besides being the consummate idiot, you know, when I think that, you know, all the dialogue about gain of function and the research that he was doing in China because he wasn't allowed to do it in the United States has really painted that guy as a buffoon. And, you know, the way that he advocated for, you know, first no masks, then triple masks, and, you know, and the idea of shut down, don't shut down. You know, when you are a policymaker, a leader, you're supposed to look at health in total. Well, how about the fact that when we closed business down and schools down, the suicide rate went through the roof? The domestic violence went through the roof. The drug overdose went through the roof. You got to look at all of those things in total. And I'm a big fan how Ron DeSantis handled Florida. And I've got to tell you something. That is, we need to look at freedom and making sure that we keep things running and the train's moving on time.
Thank you, Matt. I just point out to Matt Salmon, if you remember, you're old enough to remember the Cold War when people would disappear from the top of the Soviet Union parade. They'd be gone. Tony Fauci's out of the parade now. He's gone. He's been disappeared. It's very, very interesting and telling.
Mistake. Anthony Fauci is probably the easiest person to vindicate when you look at everything that has gone wrong with how the country managed COVID over the last couple of years. We've learned some really, really stark lessons about, you know, what to do and what not to do. And I think that Anthony Fauci is the poster boy for everything that went wrong.
Matt Salmon, thank you. Continued good luck in your race for the governorship in Arizona. Come right back here to the Hugh Hewitt Show. Welcome back, America. I'm Hugh Hewitt, joined now by Brett Baer, host of Fox News Special Report every afternoon at 6 p.m. I'll be joining Brett this afternoon. Also, the host yesterday on Fox News Sunday with Wendy Sherman, Deputy Secretary of State. Good morning, Brett. How are you?
Good morning, Hugh.
I watched and I played the audio of Wendy Sherman a couple of times. Great interview. She did not have an answer for you when you pressed her about Iran. She said nuclear disarmament first, bad behavior second. Has that worked, Brett?
No, I don't think so. And I think the administration's in a bind here. They've painted themselves into wanting this Iran nuclear deal to the exclusion of other things that are happening. And it's just really in your face after this ballistic missile attack on the consulate in Iraq. Now, she said the target wasn't the consulate, but the missiles landed very close to our consulate in Erbil. And I think it's tough for them to square that circle.
You know, Brett, in the years that you were the Pentagon correspondent for Fox, I know you made double-digit trips to Iraq, double-digit trips to Afghanistan. I've never been to Kurdistan. The late Christopher Hitchens loved it and would always talk about it on this show. Have you been to Erbil?
I have, many times.
And
it's a nice place. It's, you know, they're kind of open for business. In fact, there was a business effort by bringing companies and CEOs just this past week. And I talked to one of them who was there, who said, I can't believe that I was just there, you know, being courted for business. And it's getting struck in that area by missiles.
Now, Wendy Sherman coming on Fox News Sunday is good. I'm glad that she did. But as you pointed out, she did the 94 deal with North Korea. She did the 2015 JCPOA. Former head of Emily's List, she speaks in that kind of Aspen Institute Davos speak that just never makes any sense to me. At the end of that conversation, do you think you were any closer to the motive that is animating Team Biden here?
That's a great question, Hugh. I mean, I tried to ask different things different ways so that the audience could see how there's kind of a confliction here. And I think it's clear, but, you know, at some point you have to stop asking the question because the answer coming back is roughly the same. I do think that they politically, on a foreign policy issue, just have a really tough hand to defend. You know, not doing domestic production, going after Venezuela, signing this Iran deal in part because of the oil, but also obviously the nuclear part of it. I thought the other scary answer was, is the deal better than 2015 or as good as 2015?
Shit, we didn't know.
Answer that.
I saw her. I played that three times. How can you not know that it's honestly, it was a very upsetting interview. Well done. But I don't think that they actually know why they're there. And that I dig back down. Do you discern a theory? I don't like to just say appeasement, but I come back to it's the 1930s all over again. I do not understand their theory of the case, why we're doing these Vienna talks.
I can't get there either, other than they believe that by doing this, it ties the hands of Iran in a nuclear sense. However, if you talk to the Israelis, they have no confidence that that does that. In fact, it may speed it up in their minds if you listen to the Israelis talk about it. I think the fact that she said that it could be worse, we don't know yet, is really stark, because there were people that were very critical of the 2015 deal. If it is any way less than that, it's going to open the door to a lot of criticism. And it also opens the door, obviously, to provocative actions from Iran, China, Russia, any other bad actors.
She's a very nice person. I met her at the Aspen Talk Fest a few years ago, just like Tony Blinken, a very nice guy. But when you get down to the bottom of it, Brett Baer, you covered the Pentagon for 5 years, White House correspondent, been anchoring special report for a number of years. Is there a rationale on the Democratic side for, do they have a grip on how the world works, or is it wish fulfillment?
Well, I listen, first of all, she came on, which
yes.
was a great thing. And I was working to get some member of the administration all week. And that, you know, that show is a lot about booking, and it's
right.
about, you know, getting someone to answer questions. And I think by doing that, it does open up eyes to, you know, their point of view. I do think the world view is much, much different. And they believe that international cooperation is the way that the U.S. succeeds. In one sense, you know, you can see a success from getting NATO countries on the same page, working from behind to cajole different countries. But they're open to the criticism of leading from behind, and in some cases, projecting weakness. And I think that Republicans jump on that.
We'll pick that up tonight at 6. I'll see you on Special Report. Last quick question. You've covered the Pentagon for a long time. Have you been able to figure out if Ukraine can hold on, Brett? Do you have any hope that they can?
There's actually a slight chance, and I've talked to like 5 different people on this, probably 30% maybe, that they actually pull this off.
Wow.
That's going to be tough.
That's a big story, though. Again, trust the Pentagon correspondents. Brett was one. They actually do hard news reporting across the river. Brett Baer, special report. See you tonight at 6. Thank you, America. Thank you, Dwayne and Adam. Thank you, Ben. I'll talk to you tomorrow.
Three-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.